The main speaker for this afternoon before the interval is Professor Jan Melissen. He is a senior research fellow at Klingendaal and amongst many other things also professor at the University of Antwerp. I always think if he would not have been a scientist, he should have become diplomat, because his subject is diplomacy in the digital age. Please, Mr. Jan Melissen.
Thank you very much, Eric, for your kind introduction. I shall take up the challenge by trying to be very undiplomatic. It's my great honor, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, to be here this afternoon and to share a few thoughts with you about digital diplomacy. Thanks to the organizers, thanks also to the Ministries of Foreign Affairs of Finland and Belgium, who co-commissioned the report that we have written at Klingendaal about diplomacy in the digital age, where the question is really, well, what is this all about? And I know there is a lot of expertise in this room, many people representing countries that are experimenting a great deal with this. I just had a little chuckle with the Indian ambassador, exchanging ideas about how Mr. Narendra Modi was actually hosting meetings with the top 10 CEOs of technology companies in the United States. It's a topic of great interest, to me and my co-author, Brian Hocking. The report that we've done has been translated into Chinese in the meantime. There will be a book for an American publisher. So we have joined a conversation that is apparently catering for some needs. I'm saying we have joined a conversation because that's how I feel. I feel like a real beginner in a new field where many people are like myself, individuals and organizations trying to come to terms with what it means to them to operate in the digital age. So is it all about social media? If that were the criteria, it's very easy to find two role models. Actually, only last week, one British diplomat, Ambassador Tom Fletcher, received the Internet Oscar, the so-called Lovie Award. Ambassador Fletcher, has more than 50,000 followers. But of course, every man is meeting his match. I know a Dutch diplomat who's now based in the United States, Alexander Verbeek, who has 71,000 followers. This means the same to me as 10 billion euros on my bank account. I can't make much sense of these figures. Also, Mr. Verbeek is following himself 47,000 people. Now, this looks to me like the sort of digital variant of reciprocity in relations. And what do you do when, as a diplomat, you follow 47,000 people? I have no idea, but one thing is perhaps clear. These two gentlemen have no fear of being exposed, no fear of going out, and that is perhaps part of what diplomacy in the digital age is all about. In an interesting report by the Mercator Foundation in Berlin, by actually the Center on Leadership and Advocacy, one of the conclusions in the report was that diplomats do actually often feel rather insecure, surprisingly, when they are operating in very diverse networks where they no longer have the distinctiveness that they have in their own realm, in their own comfort zone. So these two gentlemen, I guess, Fletcher and Verbeek, are of a different breed. Neither do they fear negative reactions about what they're saying. I looked at Verbeek's account, Twitter feed. Every message has a picture. So there were lots of ors and ahs on my side. But I think he has no fear of negative reactions, and neither does Mr. Fletcher have that. As Richard Stengel, the US Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy, recently said in an interview, diplomats, referring to American diplomats, need a thick skin and should not be so afraid of negative reactions. This comes with operating in the digital age. So in this discussion, my starting point is that I would like to exchange ideas with people who speak the same language. I've been fearful of being confronted with people who speak program language, and which is very exclusive. It's very easy to talk about digital for people in a way that excludes large swaths of the population. I think we should talk a language in which we understand one another. Also, digital diplomacy I see as a shorthand for broader change in diplomacy. So what is happening to diplomacy is really the main question for me, and I think your main purpose should be, how does it contribute to the objectives of what you want to achieve? Where does digital come in? How does it contribute to foreign policy? Foreign ministries, would be my contention here, are in the first stage. They're just trying to figure out what it all means to them. Standing in a long tradition of how to do business, they're confronted with a fast-changing environment and these new technologies. So there is skepticism and hype. One could say that's the first stage where we are now. People are embracing and saying, well, it should all be digital. And others say, well, really, this is only another way of doing what we have always done. The second reaction might be gradual acceptance that indeed digitization or digitalization has an impact on diplomacy. And the third reaction would then be in time, mainstreaming of new practices within the organization. And I can imagine that many of you have seen, to draw a parallel, have seen that happening in the field of public diplomacy. At the end of the 20th century, not very long ago, one could still read in diplomatic dictionaries that that was really propaganda, not something for diplomats. Now we have seen how it has been mainstreamed in your organizations, and it's not just the business of some communication experts, but everybody's business. My suspicion is that the same may happen to digital diplomacy. So what is technological change doing to diplomacy? There have been technological revolutions before, and one of them was, of course, the arrival of the telegram, when Lord Palmerston famously said, "This is the end of diplomacy." Well, it wasn't. At the time of WikiLeaks, an Italian foreign minister exclaimed exactly the same. If you will forgive me that I forgot his name. But he also said, this is the end of diplomacy as we know it. So many years after WikiLeaks, we know diplomacy has not disappeared. What we saw at the time of the telegram, the arrival of the telegram, we could see how power was going to headquarters, how diplomacy became more centralized, greater power over the embassies, over the periphery, the possibility to manage embassies better thanks to telegrams. You may reflect on what the effect is of the arrival of social media and the arrival of digital tools. I expect that there is not just a very simple answer, but certainly it may be that in the networks that foreign ministries and embassies are, there is a gradual shift slightly to the periphery from the center, to places where you are. Now, what does complexity invite and new technologies? Certainly vagueness. Vagueness because we have to figure out what it means. And again, a parallel may work. I don't know whether you've heard of this word soft power, but I'm sure you have heard of the word soft power. You may even have used it yourself. And I sense that many people use it without really knowing, particularly politicians, knowing what it exactly means. We see the same with digital. What we also see is what I would call the Nescafe school of people who make instant interpretations of what's going on. And that would be, for instance, an example of that would be what we've seen in the 1990s with the CNN effect, the supposed CNN effect, where instant news was supposedly driving international politics. More recently, with the so-called Arab Spring, I think we've seen the same, a rather overestimate, an overestimation of what technology is doing to international relations. We have to understand technology always, indeed, within its social environment. What is it doing to social relations, and how do social relations between organizations and people pick up these technologies? So in the way I look at these things, I have an interest in how diplomacy is changing, how innovation in diplomacy takes place, I think there is a paradox. And that paradox is that diplomacy in the digital age starts with understanding diplomacy offline. So you have to understand change in diplomacy and then see how the digital age builds on that. But that things are going on is very clearly, and as the gentleman before me talking about the media, I think made clear directly and indirectly, one of the very basic functions of diplomacy is being tested, information gathering. Information gathering is so much easier technically, but at the same time, processing and analyzing information has become an enormous challenge. So here, enter the newsrooms of the Dutch Foreign Ministry, the data scientists, and external agencies, because really, with just a few people in the embassy, it's a very complex landscape where we're trying to find our feet. Newness in diplomacy, then, I think has a lot to do with today, with new communication technology. And we've seen how some activities are actually that were peripheral in diplomacy have moved to the center, some functions of diplomacy, the consular function, public diplomacy. It was all seen as peripheral of the work of foreign ministries, has moved right to the center. And we can see in these two areas how fundamental technology also is. Public diplomacy is a field where we can see that technology, use of new media, use of digital tools, gives enormous instruments to understand a lot more of what's going on in other countries. It also enhances enormously the penetration capacity of embassies into foreign societies, even of formerly closed societies. Consular is about service delivery. It's perhaps the field where most clearly we can see that digital tools can help people who want to be helped here and now. And they want to be helped by real people with a human face, but they also want to be helped by people who understand the challenge of modern technology and who are as technologically savvy as they are themselves in society outside your organization. So that's where your challenge is and that's where the interface is. But also in negotiation, I think, the hard core of diplomacy, one could easily dismiss and say, well, technology has no impact on negotiation, but I think there are many examples of where we see that in one way or another, the social media play a role, are visible, and to start with, what has become very important in negotiations is the framing of what negotiations are about. And that framing does not take place in smoke-filled rooms where men, like in the interwar period, were negotiating treaties. No, it's now a place outside where men and women and organizations of all types are trying to frame what the negotiation is about. And that is where digital technology also comes in. So it's no good to juxtapose, would be my opinion, digital and non-digital, juxtapose analog and digital. And one could draw a parallel here where some students of international politics were talking about the demise of the state compared with the rise of non-state actors. I think we can see very clearly that the state is here to stay, but that the state is involved in a new kind of game in a much more hybrid world of state and non-state actors, which is also a much more hybrid world in a communication sense. Old media and new media, one feeding into the other, and it's your task to find your way in that complex landscape. Two features of diplomacy in the digital age, as I would see it, one, is embeddedness in society. I've already commented on public diplomacy and consular affairs. Society becomes a resource, and that's also where digital tools can be used. We can see in humanitarian crisis assistance how what people know, and also in consular assistance, what people know actually helps government in crafting solutions. The second dynamic is a network dynamic where there is an internal one, where the balance may shift towards more power, more importance of the embassy. Secondly, that it's much more important to work with external partners. And that's doing all sorts of things to diplomacy where digital is also coming in. Information used to be, in its most traditional sense, power for the individual diplomat. In the digital age, it's power, but it's also something you share. You share in a network. In that network, you count, if you master the technologies, that your counterparts in the network count. In the network, the rules of the game are not the rules of the game of diplomacy. It's not the organization that you represent, but your ideas, the ideas that you have, the knowledge that you have, that contribute to the network, that you need in turn to find solutions for your issues. So optimizing the network is important. Network diplomacy, I would say, networking is not just something diplomats do. No, it's become the foundational basis of diplomacy today. And it also means optimizing your internal network, where, again, digital comes in. I don't know how in your foreign ministry one job is handed over to his or her successor, but in many foreign ministries, this is, let me put it mildly, not extremely well organized. And I don't know how in your internal, in your foreign ministry, how you find knowledge that you need. Do you have a customer relation management system? Or issues where digital technology, digital tools will, sooner rather than later, give answers to organizations that are so rich in knowledge like yours, but that have one big issue, how to get it out of the organization and how to get the knowledge from outside your organization and use that knowledge for the purposes of your own organization. There's actually, right at this moment, in the digital sphere, an interesting little polemic going on conducted by the Lowy Institute in Australia and Sydney about what digital diplomacy is, whether the Australians are doing this well, and what it is really for. I can really recommend that to you, as there are so many debates about this going on right now. Now, diplomacy can be used for all sorts of purposes, and I would say that that applies in the same way to digital diplomacy. So it can be soft, it can be hard, it can be beneficial, and it can be really nasty. And I think depending on where you live, you see one phase of digital diplomacy or the other. When you think of relations between Russia and Europe, or when you think of relations in Northeast Asia between South Korea, Japan, and China, you see more of the nasty phase of digital diplomacy. When you think of the humanitarian operations that I alluded to, or one could think of development cooperation, ODA, one can see that there is enormous potential that we have to tap into, to study, to learn how to use, to make use of digital diplomacy for foreign policy purposes. Digital diplomacy can be soft. It can be about the empowerment of the individual. Digital diplomacy can be hard, and here one often thinks of the subject of big data. Big data that harbor enormous capacity for foreign ministries. One can just think of what you can know about other nations, but also what you can know about negotiations and the history of negotiations, your own positions in the history of negotiations, and so on. So there is enormous potential there, but of course there are also negative sides to it, a bit of an Orwellian idea that big data is not just beneficial. Certainly they cannot help us to predict the future, and in my mind there is a risk with big data that the data scientists, the number crunchers, are taking over from people who are taking sensible decisions. You can imagine a situation where people say, well, the data speak. It may seem common sense. It may seem common sense to you to decide for A, but the data say that you have to go in the direction of B. So coming closer to the end of my talk, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and otherwise, please cut me off. Coming closer to the end of my talk, let's focus again briefly on social media. Is it just superficial? Is it just like Mr. Fletcher and Mr. Verbeek? I'm not saying they're superficial, not at all, but just all over the place with pictures and messages and thousands of followers. Well, briefly about the followers, probably it was important, of course, is who is following you. And many non-governmental organizations are doing research into whom they are following and whom by whom they are followed. So it's perhaps here we see that the diplomat comes a bit closer to the intelligence officer. Excellence in the digital age we also find outside the state. The International Committee on the Red Cross is well known for its highly sophisticated digital strategies. Among international organizations, the World Bank is considered as one of the leaders. So what I try to do in learning about this subject is shopping everywhere, indeed also going to business, because I realize that businessmen, they have a gun against their head. If they do something wrong and it goes digital, they see their profits going down. Think of Volkswagen. So some people may feel in a much more acute sense than diplomats do what's the potential or what's the risk of digital. Volunteer-based organizations go digital because they know that's where people are, they know where volunteers are. So social media may also be more than just be a superficial pastime. Although, admittedly, many individual diplomats, like any other human being, I think, are trying to find their feet, are trying to find their voice in these new types of media. But they have been, you can see how in different functions of diplomacy we see that social media are there. Just a couple of examples from our report. MH370 went down, and immediately the whole issue went viral. Went viral to the extent that the Chinese government started blaming the Malaysian government. The Ebola crisis led to an acrimonious exchange between a non-governmental organization and an international organization, Médecins Sans Frontières International and the World Health Organization. The Nepal earthquake. The Dutch are proud that they've got their act together. They went on Twitter, like so many other countries, and they very soon found who were the Dutch people in Nepal and where they were. So it shows the potential in helping people in service delivery. In the most traditional of negotiations, the nuclear negotiations over Iran, we saw that the Iranian foreign minister was using Twitter to communicate to his, using social media to communicate to his domestic constituency. To sum it up all with the words of US Secretary of State John Kerry, digital diplomacy is diplomacy, period. And that's the challenge, to find our way. How do individuals find their way? As I said at the beginning, I'm not a media person. I don't represent a state. So I'm also allowed, I've been assured by our chairman, to say some provocative things. I shall conclude on that note. Is diplomacy really the norm? How digitized are diplomats really? I don't have an answer to that question. I have many stops in the months ahead at organizations and in countries where I hope to learn more about this. But what's interesting, I think, is that some norms are breaking down. In the rather conservative culture of foreign ministries, making mistakes could be lethal. Now we say that people are allowed to make mistakes. There is a realization that there is no escape from making mistakes when you are in the digital domain. Interesting form of cultural change. At the same time, I see political correctness around. How could one possibly dare and say, I'm not in the social media when everybody's talking about it? So it's a good subject for lunchtime talk. There is a little bit of political correctness around. But my hunch is that many diplomats, when it comes to Twitter, analogous to LinkedIn, where you can easily see this, may actually be following diplomats. So how does it mean that diplomats go out of their own sphere or stay in their own sphere when they are using these kinds of media? And I think very often there may also be very good reasons to be anonymous as a practitioner in the social media. One can easily see why this would be the case in the consular field, where you're really the coal face defending the interests of people in distress. It's better to be anonymous there. There are other reasons, and that is that digital accounts that may seem totally passive accounts are in a way very active accounts, because diplomats are using them to get a wealth of information at their fingertips that was not there before. So Twitter is used passively, just sticking to this medium. Some people say Twitter is the medium of diplomacy. But then there is an Israeli scholar, Ilan Manor, he's now at Oxford, who has done research into the work of foreign ministries, and one of his conclusions is that foreign ministries as institutions are mainly still in broadcast mode. And again, here one could make the comparison with public diplomacy, which has evolved from broadcasting to dialoguing, to co-creation, to use that fashionable word of cultural relations. Foreign ministries may still, he maintains, are still very much behaving in a digital world like analog species. But then, on a positive note, I see that there is actually also great potential. When we see in the human rights field with a more campaign style of diplomacy, what digital media can do is quite phenomenal. There are examples like the UK initiative on the prevention of sexual violence in conflicts, which has been a very digital operation. The Dutch have been doing things on LGBT rights, where digital work has been very, very important. Sweden, standing up for vulnerable persons, has a campaign called Midwives for All, that is also a very much a digitally based campaign. Not going into that, but here we perhaps are moving from digitized diplomacy to digital diplomacy. Initiatives that are not taken towards the digital age, but that are born in the digital age. And with that, I would like to close on this very positive note, because your question is really, what can digital diplomacy do for you? Thank you very much.